Last fall, I believe, our church started a neighboring initiative. What they've asked us to do is to go invite our neighbors into our home for these 4 weeks. The objective is all about how can we be a better neighborhood? How can we get to know each other better and become the kind of neighborhood so that, you know, we can be there for each other and be more of a true neighborhood and not just individual people, individual homes. One of my neighbors, two houses down, also goes to our church. And we got together and decided that we would co-host these meetings. We're going to do the first 3 weeks at my home, and then the fourth week we decided we would do it at her home, and we would be outside, and it would be a potluck. The next day, my next-door neighbor couldn't go with me. She was busy, so I had a few more invitations to hand out, so I went by myself. One of my neighbors, who has probably lived here about 5 years, I know her, but not intimately. I mean, we're not great friends. We say hi and bye, you know, wave from the street, you know, from the driveway, that kind of thing. I went to her home, and her niece answered the door, and when I explained to her, you know, what I had, she invited me in, and we went back into the den, and there was my neighbor sitting in a chair watching a movie. She had tears coming down her eyes, and you could tell she'd been crying. And the movie, I looked, and it was The Titanic, which, that's a sad movie, so initially I thought, okay, she really is into this movie. So I start to explain to her why I'm there. I give her the invitation. I'm explaining the initiative and inviting she and her husband to come. You could tell she's listening, but not really. And, you know, still her eyes, you know, are just teary and all of that. And I learned that her dog, who is just so precious to her, is dying from cancer. She's torn about, when do I put her down? Am I being cruel by not putting her down? Am I being cruel by putting her, you know, the whole, how's this going to play out, you know, this end of my dog's life? And then, in the course of all of that, I found out that her husband has cancer as well. And he was diagnosed 18 months ago, and I had no idea. After I got home from that, it was a weird feeling. I just felt like, wow, this person lives just a few yards from my home, and I didn't even know he has cancer. And I didn't have any idea that over the last 18 months, they may have needed help with any number of things. And it just really, really hit me that this is really a necessary program that the church is doing, because we do need to know our neighbors. I've served in the church really almost all my adult life. I'm very willing to be where God needs me, to serve in different capacities. Right now I'm serving in student ministries. I have a group of ninth grade girls that I help lead. I never thought about moving that into the neighborhood and serving God by serving my neighbors. Now I just see it differently. Now I really feel like this is just another place where God is calling me to serve.
Isn't that awesome? It's amazing how when we act in obedience and go do what God asks us to do, He opens our eyes and things change in our lives. It's just amazing what God is doing in us as we learn to follow Him. So excited about the stories that are coming in about neighboring and what God's teaching you through this whole thing. I want to welcome you. Good morning. Welcome to Hill Country Bible Church. And I want to welcome those of you joining us at Steiner Ranch in Brushy Creek. Welcome. Good morning to you as well. Guy was a customs agent at the border, and here comes a truck pulls up. Now, this guy wasn't young. He was a seasoned agent. Truck pulls up. He could tell there's something not right about this. And so he pulls the driver out of the car, says, out of the truck, what you carrying? They basically tear the truck apart, take the fenders off, look underneath. In the back, they do everything. Nothing there. Puts the guy in the truck. He drives on. Next week, here he comes, same old truck pulls up, same old process. The next week, same old truck, same old process, week after week. Finally, the customs guy's going, there's something wrong here, something I got to fix. And so he basically, like, does a full body search of the driver and They start actually scanning the truck to try to find out what's going on. They're doing all this stuff, and this goes on nothing. Week after week, same day, same truck. Every week, same day, same truck. Every week, search. Well, this goes on for a couple of years, and the customs agent's an old guy. He's getting ready to retire. In fact, it's his last week. And on his last week, here comes the truck, pulls up. And he pulls a guy out of the truck, and he says, listen, I'm not even going to check your truck this week. He says, I'm just so, like, you're doing something wrong. But I can't figure out what it is. Now, I'm done this week, and I will spend my retirement kind of wondering. So I'll tell you, you get a free pass today. I'm not going to tell on you. Just tell me, what are you smuggling? And the guy looked him in the eye and said, trucks. Nothing like missing the obvious, right? Is it possible that Christians who really want to follow Jesus, we're really sincere about loving our Lord and following him, that we could actually be missing the obvious? When Jesus was asked the question, what is the most important thing for people who love God to do? Do you remember what he said? Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. And then he says this, all the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Now we get the first one. That's not hard for us to comprehend. Love God with all of me. But here's the thing that's happened in American culture. We don't love our neighbors. In fact, typically we don't even know our neighbors. 50% of the people in the United States don't know the names of their neighbors, and when Christians are surveyed, they don't do any better. So could it be that we are trying to obey the commands of Jesus and trying to live our life as an act of worship, and Jesus is actually saying, if you want to get the thing right, in fact, the starting point, the peg, the obvious, just go next door. Just get to know the people next door. Begin to love them. Begin to serve them. Begin to pray for them. Begin to build a personal relationship with them. Begin to get to know what's going on in their life. And over time, you want to be able to introduce them to the greatest news in history, that Jesus Christ loves them and he's given his life for them. We're doing all kinds of things in the United States to try to re-evangelize the United States, except the very thing that Jesus tells us to do. And that's just like, love the people in proximity to you. Now, the command here is love. Love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself. And this is the heart of the Christian gospel, that God loved us and he showed his love to us and how he reached out for us in Jesus. Every human created in the image of God has the capacity both to receive love and to give love. And that capacity remains present in both Christians and non-Christians. And so when God gives his love to you, you have something to give back to him and something to give to others, and it enhances the joy in your life. And when others receive his love through you, they have the ability to receive it and then reflect it back or give it back, and it brings joy to their life. And so Jesus isn't making this command to ruin your schedule. Jesus isn't making this command to make your busy life more busy. You did that on your own. Those were your choices and priorities. Jesus is doing this to bring you joy and to transform your life in relational and supernatural ways. That's what he's called us to do. So here's the challenge. What happens when you meet the people around you and you don't share the same beliefs? You don't like their words? You don't like their actions? In fact, you don't like anything about them. Now, the culture around us would tell us that what we ought to do is we ought to practice tolerance. Now, the word tolerance, which is very popular today, actually comes from the Latin word, which means endurance. In other words, put up with them. Put up with them. Now, one of our former presidents, John F. Kennedy, defined tolerance this way. He said, tolerance implies no lack of commitment to one's own belief. In other words, you can keep your own beliefs. Rather, it condemns the oppression and persecution of others. In other words, it's not that you agree with their beliefs or accept them or adopt them. You just want to make sure that they're not oppressed or persecuted. In other words, that they have rights. That's what he's saying. Now, I realize in our world today that this concept has been politicized, it's become politically correct, and now it's loaded down with all kinds of baggage, but this is not a political message. This is a personal message about you. So let me make a really strong statement here. As Christians, we are not called to be tolerant. Now, before anybody says amen, let me just say that the standard that we've been called to is much higher than that. In fact, it's beyond human attainment. It is divine in nature. We are called to extend grace. In other words, we are called to give people something that they actually don't deserve, because the nature of Christianity is that God gave us something that we did not deserve. That is forgiveness. He took the pain, absorbed the punishment, did the time for our crimes, and he grants us as a free gift his favor. That's what Christianity is all about. So it would only make sense that having received grace, that people would experience it from us as we give it. And so I want you to show you a passage where Jesus talked about this, and I just want you to know this is going to blow your mind today. It's going to blow your mind because Jesus is going to give us some examples here of what this looks like. So he shows us pictures of this revolutionary act of grace, revolutionary act of grace. So open your Bibles to Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6, Jesus is teaching, and we come to this passage in Luke chapter 6. We're going to start in verse 27. Starting in verse 27, he starts with, "But I tell you who hear me." Okay, let me just pause right here for a minute. Now, when Jesus is talking to a crowd, everybody actually hears his voice. So that's not what he's talking about, right? He's talking about those who will actually listen to what he's saying. And I just want you to know there are going to be two types of people in this room today. The two types of people are the people that will listen to what Jesus says and the people who will inner lawyer up. You know that little lawyer inside of you that starts arguing your case and defending you why what you think is right and why you've got it together and what you're doing is justifiable and all that? That little devil in you? That says, don't listen to this, don't listen to this. Oh, no, that's extreme. That's crazy. I couldn't do that. Don't do that. Those are the people who are here who will not hear, because you're going to be having a dialogue between you and your inner lawyer instead of between you and the Holy Spirit. Okay? Some of you in here are going to say, Jesus, shut that little guy up so I can actually listen, so I can hear what you want to say to me. And if you listen and hear what he wants to say, it will change your life in amazing ways. So here's what he says. I tell you who hear me. Here we go. Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. And pray for those who mistreat you. Whoa. That's opposite of what we do, right? In fact, what Jesus is saying is that you extend grace to other people even when they don't give it to you, even though they give you bad. In fact, what he talks about in these four commands here is that we would do the opposite through the power of God, his love in us, that we would extend that regardless of what comes our way. So he says, love your enemies. We don't love our enemies. We isolate and destroy, right? Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. People that don't deserve your good, who are out to get you, you're doing good back. Not doing, like, let me just avoid you. It's actually you're doing good to them. You're bringing the coffee in the morning to the person who has gossiped on you and talked on you and treated you badly. okay, or more. He says the next one, this is really interesting, bless those who curse you. So the people that are calling down pestilence, plague, and disaster on you from heaven, who wish that God would just ruin your life, while they're calling down those things, you're praying blessing on them. God, prosper them. Give them peace. Give them joy. May their life work out well. Whoa, that's undeserved. Exactly. That's what grace is. And then he says this last one, pray for those who mistreat you. The word here actually means to physically abuse you because of your faith, who are actually hurting you. They are persecuting you. They are taking your property. They're taking your money. And what are we supposed to do for those? We're supposed to intercede on their behalf, bring them into the presence of God. He's not saying pray down, you know, bad things on them. You're praying for their welfare. This is so opposite. Now, he doesn't just stop here at the theoretical level. He gives examples. Watch what he says. This is mind-blowing again. He says, if someone strikes you on one cheek, turn to him the other also. If someone takes your cloak, do not stop him from taking your tunic. Give to everyone who asks you. Now, the context here is somebody who's poor, a beggar, needing something. Give to everyone who asks you. And if anyone takes what you belong, now this is a different situation where somebody's actually stealing from you or taking something from you, do not demand it back. Now, in that culture, they were as litigious as we are in this culture. If someone defrauds you, you go get an attorney and you go after them. You take them to court. You sue them. You said, I thought that was just in our time. Everything that's going on in our time has happened in another civilization at some other time in history before. We are not that inventive, okay? People have done this in the past, and that was really common in Jesus' day. So he gives these extreme examples, like turn the other cheek and give someone the shirt off your back. Now, these things, as soon as you hear them, you start coming up with all kinds of reasons not to do that. Like, what about self-defense? Don't I have the right to protect myself? Isn't that my God-given right? And you know, what about some beggars asking me for money? Shouldn't I tell them to go get a job? Like, isn't that really more loving to tell them to go get a job? And somebody takes my coat? Like, isn't it enabling them to give them my undergarments also? And that's what we start thinking. Because you know what we don't think? We don't think about grace. We don't think that if God would have demanded exact justice for what we had done, we would be in a world of hurt. So personally, I don't believe that Jesus is giving these examples as literal examples. Think about it. When Jesus is talking about turn the other cheek, do you think he's actually saying if someone insults you by giving you the backhand, because that's what he was talking about here, that you then turn around and go, oh, come on, here's the other one, light this one up too. That's nonsensical. That's not what Jesus is saying. And the second one's even worse. If someone takes your cloak, you give him your tunic or your undergarment, is Jesus really telling people to run around naked? Because that's all they had was two garments, right? So he's not really telling people, oh, you know, if someone steals your coat off your back, then you turn around and give them the rest of your clothes and go home naked. I don't think that's what Jesus is saying here. What Jesus is saying here is that the response of grace is exactly opposite of what you would expect when someone does something. Someone insults you, here's what you expect, to retaliate, insult them back. Here's what we opt to. Oh, I'm above that. I'm just going to ignore them and avoid them. What Jesus is saying is actually, you need to lean into the relationship enough that you could receive another insult. It's not retaliating. It's not avoiding. It's actually continuing to love. It's someone takes something from you. You don't credit it to, well, my stuff is more important than this person. You ask the question, how can I show love and grace to that person? That is so opposite. Call this a revolutionary act of grace that gets people's attention. Think about what the world would be like if that were true. Now, to show you how radical this is, the next verse is the golden rule. He says in verse 31, do to others as you would have them do to you. Now, People said, well, the golden rule appears in every religion. Every religion has some kind of form of the golden rule. But here's what's unique about Jesus. In every other religion where this golden rule comes up, it's always in the negative. The golden rule in the negative is this. Don't do things to other people that you don't want them to do to you. In other words, it's proactive. In other words, go around in the world and treat people in such a way that they won't retaliate against you. Okay? Jesus is giving a reactive command here. Those who've insulted you, those who've stolen from you, those who've mistreated you, you need to do to them in the midst of that mistreatment as you wish they would have done to you and you want them to do to you. In other words, our behavioral response to people doing the wrong thing to us would be to show them a better way by how we respond back to them in the proper way. Jesus is saying, what the world needs to see is love and grace. And the time that the world needs to see it most, the time that your people, your neighbors, your workers, co-workers, the people you go to school with, the time they need to see it most is when they're dishing out evil in your direction. Because that's the time that is revolutionary. Whoa, what is this? It's called grace, unmerited favor. So what does this look like? I want to show you something. I want to show you something that was captured on a police dash cam. Call was made because kids were making noise and disturbing the neighborhood. And a policeman went out on a routine call to deal with this. But the result of what happened is a revolutionary act of grace, not what they were expecting. Let's watch together.
Received several 911 calls from a cell phone, but the child on the line stands someone instead in Georgia.
How are you? You believe someone's calling to complain about kids playing basketball in the street? You believe it?
Yeah. I don't know who called, but obviously, I ain't got no problem with it.
Hey. That's a nice hoop.
Oh, yeah? I ain't real good at that. Is that like NBA height? Oh, no. Now you bought back up. All right, guys, I'm going to go. Just do me a favor. Obviously, I have no problem with you playing basketball on the street, just if you can.
Sorry.
Just try not to be too loud. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But have fun.
All right.
Glad to see you all doing this and out there causing problems. All right, you guys play out here every day?
Yeah.
I might bring some back, though. You going to be out here tomorrow?
Yeah.
Right, I'm going to try to bring some back out here. We'll get a little game going tomorrow. All right?
Bring some backup, right?
Yep.
Huh? You guys ready?
Yeah.
You bring your good game?
Yeah.
You see, look at these big boys I brought. You sure you can take them?
Yeah.
So you're pretty sure you can take these guys, right? Well, I brought some other backup for y'all. We brought y'all some backup.
Hey, what's up, baby? You brought the ball?
Oh my God,
get out of here.
Stay out of trouble. Listen to your parents. Respect your elders. You can be anything you want to be. I'm from the same neighborhood y'all from. I grew up just like this, so only you can change this. You can change it through basketball and showing respect to your peers like you did. Good job today. All right? Proud of you guys. Stay out of trouble. Be a leader, not a follower. All right, repeat after me.
I will.
I will.
Be
become,
whatever,
I want to be. I will,
be,
a leader,
and
not a follower. I will respect, my peers,
my
elders, and especially my parents. All right, love you guys.
So when the officer showed up, pulled his patrol car up there, started walking to those kids, you can tell exactly what they were expecting, right? They're going to be told to quit, be quiet, you're messing around, you shouldn't be playing in the street. And what they got was exactly the opposite of what they expected. In fact, it was so radical that I believe that each of those kids that was playing in the street that day will be telling their grandkids about the day that the officer brought Shaquille O'Neal to the neighborhood to play ball with them, and the words that were spoken to them to respect yourself, respect your peers, respect your elders and your parents will have more meaning because they're delivered in an environment of revolutionary grace. I don't know, when I first saw this, like my soul just welled up with joy. Like, this is the way the world is supposed to work. And you, as a Christ follower, are supposed to be having those experiences. But you only have those when you're willing to let God's grace go to people that don't actually deserve it. In fact, he goes on in the passage to point that out. Look what he says in verse 32. He says, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. Like, everybody does that. The scum of the earth do that. He goes on to say, and if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even bankers do that. Oh, sorry. That's commerce. That's the American system. Like, that's business. But if we just take care of people that are going to scratch our back, we're no different than anybody else. It's as if we've received the love from God and we've bottled it up inside and it never comes out to anybody else. And what I would tell you is, over time, your experience of God's love is diminished. Without an outlet to share. When you share God's love with other people, God pours more capacity into your soul. And so many of us have been so stingy with the love we've received, we don't feel God's love anymore. And we wonder why. This is intended to bring joy into your life and surprise the people around you and surprise you as well. We had one of our neighbors over a while back, a couple that is involved in an alternative lifestyle, and it was a little awkward. They told us when they got there, a little afraid to come meet with a pastor and have dinner with a pastor. But during the course of the evening, it was really good. We heard their stories. We told our stories. We talked about God. We talked about faith. I mean, it was a really incredible, deep, personal conversation, and we built a bridge and built a relationship and a friendship with these guys, and a really positive experience. Here's one of the things they told us. They said, people from our lifestyle often come across angry. And the reason why we come across angry would be this. We have been treated so badly, particularly by Christians, that we just kind of put up this anger front to keep from being disappointed that here we go again. And so when we see somebody or interact with somebody that is Christian, kind of this feeling is, like, put up your defenses because it's coming your way, hate's coming your way. And he said, we're seldom disappointed. We're seldom disappointed. Now, here's what's crazy. How could it be that the people that were attracted to Jesus not only came from lifestyles that were unacceptable to the ancient world, but they came to Jesus, they found love in Jesus, and they were transformed in that love. The people that didn't do that in Jesus' day were the religious Pharisees. Could it be that the majority of Christians, maybe the majority of us in this country, have become so focused on what other people are doing wrong to justify why we don't have to be with them that we don't act like Jesus at all? And what we lose in that transaction is the joy of granting people revolutionary acts of grace that surprise them and change them and change them. Now, in this passage, Jesus goes on to talk about motivation, because this is not easy to do. In fact, it's supernatural in nature. And to gain our motivation, Jesus points us to God's love and mercy. The God of love and mercy is the direction he points us in. So let's keep going in the passage. He says in verse 35, but love your enemies. In other words, do the opposite. Give them what they don't deserve. Love your enemies, he says. Do good to them and lend to them without expecting anything back. And then he says these words, then your reward will be great and you will be the sons of the Most High, because he is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful just as your Father is merciful. So if we adopt a lifestyle where we actually love our enemies, we do good to them and we lend to them without expecting anything, like we start treating people, giving them grace when maybe they deserve less, we start doing that to people, he says, there is going to be a cost. Like, it's going to cost. It's going to cost time. It's going to cost relationships. We may get taken advantage of along the way. We may have to give our right to retaliate to God and absorb the pain and the frustration of what's been done to us. There is a cost involved. But Jesus himself says there's also something that we receive. And the first thing he says that we receive is a great reward. Jesus says what you lose will be rewarded. Notice verse 35. Then your reward will be great. Now, let me just say, this is Jesus. So Jesus is the one that's actually promising the reward. Okay, so who is Jesus? Second person of the Trinity? Jesus was the creator of heaven and earth. Jesus is before time and will be after time. Jesus is our Savior. Jesus is our intercessor. Jesus is the greatest of all. And he says this to you. Your reward will be great. This ain't your mother, folks. This isn't your stockbroker. This isn't your boss saying, hey, you just do what I tell you to do, your reward will be great. This isn't your guidance counselor. This is Jesus Christ. And he's saying to you, if you will do this, if you will give grace back to people when they don't deserve it, if you will treat people who treat you badly with my love, if you will do that, I promise you, you're not going to have a little reward. You're going to have a Jesus-sized reward. Now, you say, well, Tim, tell me what that is. Well, I have a problem telling you what that is. Paul says it this way in 1 Corinthians 2:9. He says, however, as it is written, no eye has seen, no ear has heard, no mind has conceived what God has prepared for those who love him. Like, I couldn't use the words to describe how awesome your reward is going to be and what that's going to look like. I don't have words for that. I can't draw pictures and show you what that would look like. But I can tell you that every word you've ever heard on this planet that would say, do this and this will be your positive outcome, that's going to look like kindergarten compared to the advanced rewards that God has in store for you. Now, I want you to see your reaction. In Luke chapter 6, verse 23, Jesus says, rejoice in that day and leap for joy, because great is your reward in heaven, for that is how their fathers treated the prophets. In other words, to the persecuted disciples, he says, on the day that you're treated badly, that day, leap for joy, because great is your reward in heaven. Now, when was the last time you were so excited about something that was coming in your future that, like, you actually cleared air? I mean, we don't jump a lot, right? Like when we get excited, we don't jump a lot. So I'm probably going to get in trouble with all the potential future grooms, but I've done a lot of weddings. And here, you know, here's the guy standing there, really uncomfortable in the tux. People are looking at him. And then the bride steps up. And she's the most beautiful thing in the world. God's best creation. And she's given herself to him. And I've never yet seen a groom start jumping up and down. Ladies, cover your ears. Your reward in heaven, guys, is going to be greater than the greatest love you've ever experienced on this planet. It's going to be unbelievable. And what God is doing for us here is he's calling us to enter into the joy today. Rejoice in the day of your persecution and leap for joy. Act like a Villanova fan after that last shot. Leap for joy today. Enjoy it. Rejoice today. Experience my joy today, because what you have in your future is beyond what you could ever imagine, and you will be so overjoyed. In other words, when we show grace to people, it enhances our joy. Like, I don't know how to get into your mind and into your heart to tell you how much you're missing out on by not doing what Jesus tells you to do. Like, how could I ever convince you that your life will be diminished in this world if you selfishly make it about you and your family and your clan and what you do and your activities and your hobbies and your kids' stuff? If you make it about that, you're going to miss out on so much love that God has wanting to pour into you and through you. So much excitement, so much reality. He says there's one more thing here, and that is you get a new identity, not with him, with the people around you. He says, then your reward will be great, and you will be called sons of the Most High. Who has that title? Gabriel came to Mary and said, you're going to have a son. You're going to name him Jesus, and he will be the Son of the Most High. Here's what this passage is saying. Jesus is saying, when you give grace to the people who hurt you, and you do it out of your motivation that you find in God, what's going to happen there is you will take on the identity of Jesus himself. People will start seeing God in you. You'll begin to gain a reputation with people as the people of God. Do your neighbors know that the son or daughter of the Most High lives next door? Do they even know that? They know that? When we do this, all of a sudden we take on a new identity. We become different. We're a new person. And we're like Jesus. He says, because he's kind to the ungrateful and the wicked, and he's merciful. Be merciful just as your Father is merciful. Thursday night we had our second Love Where You Live neighboring discussion group, and we talked about grace and tolerance and the difference between the two, showed the video, watched it, had a great discussion, had 31 show up this time, 21 last week, and the neighbors actually went out and brought the rest of the neighbors, well, not all of them, but a lot more of them, so we crammed everybody and had this awesome conversation about grace. Now, I'm going to say this carefully as I can, but just, you know, I don't know how to do this otherwise, just disclose it. There's a neighbor in our neighborhood that everybody hates. Like every gathering I go to, people talk about what this person has done to hurt people in the neighborhood. And after the meeting, one of the women in the group, after talking about grace, she's not a Christ follower, she walked up to my wife, Cindy, and she said, what if we try to plan a dinner, just the two couples, and invite these folks over for dinner? Like, let's reach out to them and try to bridge that gap. Now, in my heart, like, not only am I rejoicing, but to see other people understanding, like, it's our job to initiate, and we've been able to bring those ideas into our neighborhood and start discussing that normally. And I can tell you this, I don't know if the folks will come, because it's been bad. It hadn't been between us, but it's been bad. But if this happens, so you guys can pray that this works, okay? Pray that this works. And if people, like, from my neighborhood are here, you know what I'm talking about? If the person in our neighborhood is here that I'm talking about, you already know this, right? So this is your invitation to come over. But if we can bridge this gap, and we can begin to demonstrate love, and we can restore that relationship, everybody in our neighborhood will be talking about it. In fact, I already know what they're going to say. They're going to say, you're stupid for doing this. And a lot of people may have said, including some of the angels, Jesus, they're not worth it. You're stupid for going to the cross. Aren't you glad that he did? I want us to bow our heads to have a chance right now to just kind of reflect. And here's what I want you to reflect on. In just the quietness of your moment by yourself, blocking out by closing your eyes and your bow your head, block out everybody around you. Let God's Spirit speak to you. And here's what I want you to ask him. Is there anybody in my life who they've mistreated me and I need a radical act of grace, a revolutionary moment? And if that's the case, God, show me what you're asking me to do. Right now, in this moment, ask the Holy Spirit. I know that this conversation with God is one that's going to be ongoing throughout your day. And I really encourage you to have it, because here's what I know. If you will let God's love flow through you and you will extend grace and you will do it in an active, actual way, your joy will flow. And our community will experience this. If every Christ follower in Austin did this, our city would be filled with joy. People would love where they live. Trevor wrote a song a while back called Love Where You Live, and it's an upbeat, joyous experience. And so I'm going to ask all of our campuses, let's all just stand together and let's join in the joy of what happens when we love like Jesus loved. Trevor?
Too tall to climb, so let's bring them down and turn this world around. Love where you live. Love your neighbor as yourself. Share your life with someone else. Watch the kingdom come and let his will be done. Cause it all comes down to this. You gotta love where you live. Alright, this next part's really easy. You gotta sing with us. Here goes. We're better together. Sing it again.